Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of March 1st, 2018. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, good, good. DR is busy, busy, busy this week, but he'll be back next week, so don't give up hope. Mariah, let me set things up a little bit and tell you a story about what's recently happened here in Massachusetts. About a year ago, a little more than a year ago, the United States elected an idiot to be president. And one of his subsequent actions has been to open up essentially the entire east and west coast of the United States to offshore drilling. That is to say, to build drilling platforms, potentially within sight of land, up and down the east and west coast, off of California, off of Cape Hatteras, Virginia, off of Cape Hatteras, North Carolina. North Carolina, all these beautiful, iconic places, the Jersey Shore, look out and see a drilling platform as you're walking along the boardwalk in Atlantic City, all that kind of stuff. Just to remind everyone, after this declaration by a guy named Zinke, who's in charge of the Department of the Interior, right? He made this announcement. A day later, he flies into Florida and gets convinced by Florida's governor that, well, okay, Florida is not going to be part of this universal opening of coastline to drilling, which, of course, gives the lie to the whole question of how well thought out and scientifically motivated the whole idea of allowing offshore drilling is concerned. Anyway, having said that, then once you've announced this, the government is supposed to have public hearings about to collect input. And that process has been underway recently in Massachusetts, actually up and down the East Coast. If you Google offshore drilling news, you will see reports from all the states up and down. In fact, we reported a couple weeks ago that in California, they were going to refuse to allow any of the oil to be brought into California land, right? Which really gives them a headache for building offshore drilling rigs if they can't carry that oil up on California land. And that was the way California was going to fight back. Anyway, there are these hearings to try and collect public input. And they had several here in Boston this past week. And it's a very telling thing that our government basically shifted the location of the hearing several times from several hotels back and forth, basically trying to shake off the public to try and avoid getting a crowd or a rambunctious crowd in there, when, of course, there's a lot of people, both sides of the political aisle, who are not at all happy about the idea of offshore drilling because it can be quite catastrophic in many ways. After changing things back and forth a bunch of times, they finally ended up in a hotel in downtown Boston. And let me look at my notes here. The Gloucester Times, I think it was, yes, put up an editorial saying how this was, you know, essentially deliberately misleading. What they had is a bunch of glossy booths from corporations that might stand to make money by having offshore drilling. And it turns out at this hearing, if I read the story right, you couldn't actually speak. All you could do was put in written comments, is almost a deliberate attempt to stifle public comment.
Yeah.
And either it's going to be effective or it is just another brick in the legal wall that can be erected, because these regulations, these government actions, are not supposed to be capricious. They're supposed to allow for honest public input. And when Ryan Zinke and the Trump administration try to game the system so that they don't get many complaints, it's not a good thing. Not a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we talked last week about Scott Pruitt, the head of the EPA, who's been doing all of these things for his safety. And I get it. Sure, you know, keep him safe. I agree with that. But at the same time, the reason he has to do all these things for his safety is he's really angering a lot of the public with these actions that are not taking the public's interest to heart. And, you know, this sort of falls suit of that. You know, if you're in, if you have to keep changing the location of a, you know, a conference to avoid your constituents, shouldn't you ask yourself if you're doing something wrong for your constituents?
That's
you
a,
know?
That's a telling kind of thing. Say, why am I hiding this? Yeah. Well, there, and there is plenty of opposition. I know that here in Massachusetts, Governor Baker and the Senate has come out. All the towns have, well, not all, that's too, many, many of the towns have come out along the shore. There's lots of opposition. There was a group that went up from Cape Cod. So now, in a sense, the same people that opposed Cape Wind, right, that didn't want their view shed disturbed, are probably the same people that are now, other than the Koch brothers, but I mean, the same people that would be opposed to this. It's in let's see, the Sierra Club was there, 350 MA was, lots of people in there trying to make an opposition to this. I guess it's something that people should be aware of. You ought to, I don't know if it's much utility in calling the it's the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, the BOEM. Right? They're the ones that I think are running this program trying to collect public input. If you can send them a letter, please do. And I think all you have to do is, it's a funny thing with these hearings. I mean, you have to, you express yourself, you ask, I think sometimes if you talk about what a environmental impact that they ought to investigate, they have to take that seriously. Right? They can't just blow you off. But anyway, it's a good thing to try and speak up, because this offshore drilling thing all on the entire coast of the East Coast is just not a good deal. And there you go. So we'll put up, I can find some links we'll put up to some of the things that have been said and done about this. But you should be aware that the Trump administration's effort to allow offshore drilling is currently undergoing this hearing process, which there's a little, seems to me a little bit of hanky-panky around. We need to oppose this because it's basically another stupid idea from these guys. So having said that, see, that's everyone's entitled to my opinion, right, Mariah?
No, the other, I'm glad you share it.
The other interesting sort of background information that we want to try and keep track of is this past week has to do with Northern Pass, which is the transmission line that the utility here in Massachusetts, Eversource, is trying to build from the Hydro-Quebec hydroelectric dams up in Canada to build this transmission line across New Hampshire down into Massachusetts to give us all this gorgeous green energy. People in New Hampshire objected and basically denied the permit. And evidently, Northern and Eversource is back up there offering millions of dollars in beautification projects and protection against property values, basically desperately trying to get the New Hampshire Commission to reverse its stance. Now, when not that happens, there's a really tight timeline now for Eversource. So, yeah, just very, very, do you know what? Were you going to add something?
Yeah, well, just to clarify, I mean, we talked about this a couple weeks back as well, but the Eversource has a vested interest, right? Because they were on the committee. Some of the controversy around Northern Pass is that Eversource was on the committee who helped choose them, and they are also going to benefit from Northern Pass because they, you know, they're financially tied to them. Yeah, they're going to build it. Exactly right.
Yeah, and the whole thing is in service of the desire to have clean energy here in Massachusetts. And yeah, there's lots of, but the point being that the Massachusetts commitment to green energy puts a timeline on it, so that the fact that the Northern Pass project proposed by Eversource is on life support means that the state of Massachusetts has looked to an alternate project that would come through Maine to bring hydropower down. And all of a sudden that Maine project looks pretty good, and Eversource is scrambling to get some sort of commitment out of the state of Massachusetts, state of New Hampshire, by the end of March. I think March 27th is the deadline by which the state has to choose now one of these, again, back to choosing between two proposals. It's all very muddy, but I guess the bottom line message that we're tracking is to say that Eversource is up there throwing its money around in New Hampshire to try and convince people to accept the pipeline, and we'll see what comes of that. Right?
Do Do you know, was there any, some of, there was talk before about the need for transparency. Why did, you know, Governor Baker and the committee choose this Hydro-Québec, the, you know, Northern Pass project over all of the other proposals? And people wanted, there was a ton of demand for, tell us your justification. Tell us why you chose this project over all of the other ones. Do you know if they ever actually turned over that information, if they told, they let
I
go
never,
of that?
I never saw it anywhere. I never saw anything. Mm-hmm. I think that the place that, the website that seems to be tracking this reasonably thoughtfully is called Commonwealth Magazine. Right? They had Bruce Moore, I think, Moore, at Commonwealth Magazine. Does a good job of following these things, and if he hasn't, if they haven't come up with some sort of statement about what the Baker administration fessed up to in terms of transparency, then I doubt there's anything that's come out. I have not heard of anything, so it's still all in the dark. It's all still very murky, and will continue to be so until Baker comes out and tells us what went on. But Northern Pass is that's percolating away. I think it's gasping, right? It's on life support, but we will see through the month of March. So, but you've got those two things are two examples of why local organizing and citizen activism are important, because they are in opposition to these large-scale infrastructure projects that we don't really need anymore. Let me just say, actually, one other thing. In passing, I don't know if you saw it, Mariah, but I'll just briefly mention that there is a nonprofit here in Massachusetts called the Massachusetts. The name of the nonprofit is the Massachusetts Sustainable Energy Coalition, which sounds really great. It sounds green as Ireland on St. Patrick's Day. But it turns out it's a front organization for basically pipeline builders. And a couple of weeks ago, I was ranting and raving about a editorial that was in the Globe that seemed to have been written by some lobbyist somewhere. And my suspicion is that this Massachusetts Coalition for Sustainable Energy is the author of that kind of thing. And we should not be surprised if you see that name in the paper or someone making comments. Don't trust them. Like the, yeah. They're not. I don't think they're to be trusted. Certainly, as good faith actors for a truly sustainable future in the way their name implies. So anyway, there's that. Let me put that.
Right.
The thing
HuffPost said it's a front for natural gas interests.
Yes. Yes. And yeah. Enbridge, which is I think one of the big pipeline places. Yeah, we'll put that link up. But I guess the other important thing I wanted to point out to folks is that this coming Saturday, March 3rd, is the annual conference that MCAN holds with the Toxic Action, with another group called the Toxic Action Center. So there's a conference called the Local Environmental Action 2018 Conference. It is held at the Curry Center of Northeastern University. It starts at 9:00 in the morning on Saturday, March 3rd. You can still sign up. The prices are pretty reasonable. I don't know what I don't have the exact number, but they're not bad. They're not bad for the kind of conference. So what do you get when you go to this conference? Of course, if you've ever been to it, you know how good it is. You get to meet lots of people. It's at the Curry Center, which is a beautiful venue for having a conference, but this year there is a, let's see, I had all, everything printed. Oh, here we are. Yes, we have two great keynote speakers. One is Loretta Ross, who is one of the co-creators of the Reproductive Justice Framework. She's lectured extensively on human rights, racism, and violence against women. It's she's a great speaker. And then the other keynote speaker later in the day is Mariama White Hammond, who is on the ministerial staff at Bethel African Methodist Episcopal Church. She's committed to engaging the faith community on climate change and ecological justice issues. Absolutely the right in the wheelhouse of the kind of things that we're concerned with, right? Which is local action to try and oppose, stop climate change by making local changes. At this conference, at the Local Environmental Action 2018 conference, there's a bunch of workshops. Right? There are 16 different workshops. And I'll just list some of the titles because I can't go through them all. But there's one called Justice for Puerto Rico, Environmental Racism, A Just Transition, and the Vision for a Just Recovery. There's one called Making Conversations Count, How to Connect More People to Your Cause. So one of the points of this conference is in a sense training to help people who want to be activists. How do they get some traction? What do they do? And so that's one of the several sessions that helps people learn how to network. There's one session called 1 Year into the Trump Administration. There's a session called Beyond Standing Rock. There's lots of good sessions. In the afternoon, there's one.
And don't forget the good news, which is all about international climate actions.
Yeah.
That are doing well, successful.
That's right.
Remind us that we are moving forward in a lot of good ways.
There's changing the food system to make communities better. Deeper than water, confronting systemic racism and mass incarceration through the lens of water justice.
That's the kind
of thing that we touched on last week, of sort of the convergence of all these different kinds of politics. I mean, think of Flint, Michigan. Talk about water justice. I mean, those people are 4 years without water. It's this combination of environmental, social justice. I mean, really, there's lots of... Then at lunchtime, there's a bunch of different discussions at lunchtime. Not the most important, but a very important one from my perspective is that there'll be a meeting of MCANers. So if you're an MCAN member or you want to meet MCAN members or find out about MCAN, the board of MCAN will be having a lunchtime meeting with all comers. So it'd be great to have you come by, say hello, introduce yourself. There's a lunchtime session on gas infrastructure and health impact assessments. There's one here that sounds fascinating. This lunchtime session is called Imagining New Data Infrastructures for Environmental Health Justice in Action. New data infrastructure. I mean, that's big data, right? And then one of the things I'm really intrigued with is that there are what they're calling 20-minute expert clinics. So you can learn these particular kind of skills. One expert clinic is how to throw a successful house party. If you've never thrown a house party, it can be intimidating, but it's not really really that bad. Improving your social media. I mean, how do you use Facebook and Twitter and all these crazy things to get your message out there? Successful campaigns and strategies, grassroots fundraising, grassroots lobbying. There are all these specific things. So there's lots and lots of stuff. I think from this conference, which I really urge people to try and get to, is that you get to meet other people of a like mind, people who think like you, people who are interested in the same topics and are similar topics. And it really is rejuvenating and inspiring to feel like there are other people all marching in the same direction. You meet a lot of people. It's great to make the make friendships that way. And I think it's an excellent conference to go to. And so, so as far as the Climate Minute podcast goes, Mariah, what will you and I be doing at the conference?
Right. Well, we're hoping, I mean, we will have a booth there, and we're going to bring along some recording equipment, and we will be looking for ideas for certainly things that our listeners are interested in hearing. So if you're there and you listen to our show, stop by. Well, if you're there, you're obviously listening to our show if you've heard it from us. So come by, tell us what you're interested in, and, you know, we'll bring out our recorders and maybe even take some sound bites and put them on the show.
Absolutely. It'd be very fascinating to capture some of the real stories, things that people are trying to do. You know, you don't have to have a big, fully thought out presentation. You can come tell us in 25 words or less what you're up to and why you care about it, right? So come by and see us. We'll be at the conference. The conference will be a good thing. There's lunch. There's breakfast. I mean, it's in the Curry Center. It's beautiful. So if you can make it Sunday, of course, the Curry Center at Northeastern University is on the bus lines. It's on the Green Line. It's on the commuter rail. Comes into Ruggles Station, a couple hundred yards away from the Curry Center. It's very accessible. I say be there or be square. Right? So we will put up links to most of that stuff on the blog. The blog is at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find us on Facebook at /massclimateaction. Of course, we'd like that Facebook page. There's lots of interesting information that feeds through there. You can find this show listen to the show directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbean, SoundCloud, etc., etc. And of course, you can find us on what used to be called iTunes, but is now Apple Podcast. Right? So we're there. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So, Mariah, thanks for being here.
Always a pleasure.
And we'll see you at the conference. We'll see everybody at the conference. Get yourself down to Northeastern on Saturday morning. Love to see you, everybody. Take care. Bye-bye.
Very cool.